Welcome back to This Green Earth. I'm Nell Larson.
And I'm Chris Cherniak.
And we are fine-tuning our skills on this new board this morning. Joining us in the first part of the show today is Mike Luers, the general manager of the Snyderville Basin Water Reclamation District. And he's here to talk with us about the findings of a recent statewide study regarding coronavirus in raw, untreated wastewater. Well, Mike, thanks for joining us this morning.
Well, thank you for having me.
It seems that there's a never-ending stream of interesting topics related to wastewater that we could never have imagined.
It's a very dynamic job, I have to tell you.
Well, let's start with this. You know, when did this study initiate and kind of what was the motivating party?
Sure. So this all got started back in early April when we were contacted by the University of Utah and asked if we would participate in a study that they were starting up. And the reason they contacted us is we were one of the first to have a high initial per capita infection rate. And they collected some samples and they found the genetic material for the SARS COVID-2 virus. Shortly thereafter, in mid-April, a couple other scientists got involved along with the University of University of Utah, Utah State, BYU, and then the Utah Division of Water Quality. They said, hey, let's all get together and expand this to 10 treatment plants in Utah, including Park City. So while we were contacted before the others, this morphed into a 10 treatment plant pilot study. And the purpose of the study was very simple. Can we learn anything from determining the number of genetic copies of the SARS virus in wastewater? And can that tell us anything about infection rates or infection rates increasing or decreasing? And the pilot study showed that, yes, in fact, as the number of virus copies increases in the wastewater, it's a corresponding correlation to the number of people that are infected with the virus. And, you know, keep in mind that the virus is shed in feces from infected people, and that includes not only the symptomatic people, but the asymptomatic as well. So that's how it gets into the wastewater. Mm. And that was the kind of the history of how the study got started.
Right. And what I've learned researching this is that the virus is shed in our feces within days of us being initially infected. So it's showing up there before it kind of expresses itself in the more classic ways that we've come to learn: cough, sore throat, fever, shortness of breath, etc. So it's a really early indicator from our bodies.
That's correct. You know, here in the Park City area, the virus was detected in 91% of all the samples we collected. And if you look at the early samples from, April, we had a pretty high virus concentration. And then as the virus number of cases started to slow down, especially during the month of May, we saw a corresponding drop in the virus of the wastewater. You can follow this, and this was really shown up at the Hiram sewage treatment plant, which is up by Logan, and they didn't really have much in the way of positive results until early May. And then on May 27th, they had a really high spike. And matter of fact, it was 67 times the number of virus genetic copies that they saw from May 20th. So from May 20th to May 27th, they saw a 67-time increase in the number of viruses. And then, as we all know, shortly thereafter, the number of active cases shot up dramatically. So, that was a pretty interesting finding in that the wastewater showed the virus showing up a week or so before people came down with it.
Were you guys kind of looking at this data at that point and thinking like, whoa, there's a huge spike in the COVID and the virus in this, I guess, particular sewage influence? Like, are we needing to prepare? You know, was there enough time to kind of get that data, see it, and then anticipate what might be coming next?
Well, on the initial, weeks of this study, we didn't know what we would find. And again, we were communicating on a regular basis with the actual researchers, and they were feeding us the results of the individual samples. And we weren't sure what we would see. But it became clear as the weeks rolled on that the early high concentration samples we saw here in Summit County, and then the drop-off, that was an early indication that this study might be useful. And then certainly towards the end of the study, when the Hiram results came in, and they were very dramatic, 67 times is a huge increase in 1 week. Then we said, hey, this is going to be another tool in the toolbox for health officials to use. With all that said, just yesterday, funding was secured by the Division of Water Quality to expand this study. Keep in mind, we call it a pilot study. Now it's going to a full-blown study statewide that'll start on June 28th, I believe, with weekly samples taken from the majority of wastewater treatment plants across the state of Utah, and that'll go all the way towards the end of the year. And that was a result of the findings from the pilot study that we participated in.
All right, well, let's take a step back. I want to talk about the process of the testing that occurred. First of all, viruses are present in wastewater in general. I mean, wastewater is full of chemicals and bacteria and viruses. We shed viruses all the time, right?
That's correct. Raw wastewater contains all kinds of pathogens, bacteria, viruses. You know, think of any possible ailment or disease that someone may have. Those diseases are almost always shed in the feces. And as a result, our employees, when they maintain all the pipes that collect and transport the wastewater, they have to wear, you know, personal protective devices to stay safe. So the fact that the SARS-2 virus was a novel virus in the system, we didn't really change the safety measures that we have in place for our employees. However, we did, because it's a respiratory spread virus, we did increase the use of N95 masks for the people that are directly exposed to the wastewater, which is, you know, a good portion of our employees.
Right. And, okay, now, were you looking for actual live or active virus or genetic material, let's call it?
We were looking for genetic material, and get into the technical part of this a little bit. You know, most COVID viruses are what's called RNA viruses, and think of RNA as a one side of the DNA double helix, and there's amino acids or bases, as they're called, up and down that strand of genetic material. And the sequence of the various amino acids can tell you very specifically if it belongs to a particular virus. So the testing involved what's called the PCR test, and this is where genetic copies per unit volume of wastewater were determined, and then you could take it from there. These studies did not use or handle any live viruses. It was strictly the genetic material.
Okay, so you're looking at, you're sampling the influent. This is the raw sewage. Was any of this virus detected or genetic material detected in the effluent coming out of the plant?
Yeah. Our advanced water reclamation facilities have been designed, and we operate them to remove all viruses and pathogenic organisms. And the way we do that is by using intense ultraviolet light. Think of it as real strong sunlight. And we knock out all the viruses. And out of all the wastewater treatment samples that were taken as part of this pilot study, no COVID live viruses were found in the effluent of any of the treatment plants.
Oh, and so none of them, they all did a good job at removing the virus once it came into the plant. So in the effluent, how did your plants do? Were both of your plants sampled?
We just sampled the East Canyon because that covers about two-thirds of our service area. We thought it was a good representation of what was taking place here. We do not know at this point if the additional treatment plant, what we call the Silver Creek plant, will be sampled on this upcoming expanded study or not. But we did detect, the copies of the genetic material in 91% of our samples at the East Canyon facility. So, which was actually on the high side of some of the other treatment plants. And I think that was probably because early on we had a fairly high, per capita infection rate.
Right.
One of the questions that I had for you, Mike, had been, is this, detectable in our water here in Summit County, our influent here in Summit County? And 91% is a huge number of the samples. I was surprised to hear that. I'm wondering, are there plans to use this data to, manage or anticipate trends at the county health department level or the state health department level now that we know there's a correlation and that maybe we can get this information a little bit sooner?
This is how the Division of Water Quality will be handling the information from the pilot study and the comprehensive study coming up. Monitoring for the virus offers a tool for early detection of rising infection rates, how the trends are occurring, and then confirmation of low infection rates. We can look at the raw data, compilation of the data to say that information will be passed on to the health departments, and you would have to talk to them how they plan on using it. But it's from my perspective, it's one of many arrows in their quiver to help manage the pandemic.
If you just joined us, we're speaking with Mike Lors, his general manager of the Snyderville Basin Water Reclamation District. We're talking about a pilot study. One of Mike's plants was involved in that looks for the novel coronavirus in the influent of raw wastewater coming into their plants. You're saying that it could be used as an early warning system to look for potential maybe spikes or upcoming increases in cases. I guess it could be used in the other way too. If you have continuous high amounts of genetic material in the influent and suddenly it drops, well, maybe you'll see a drop in cases too. So it can work both ways.
Well, exactly. And that's what we saw. That's exactly what we saw here in Summit County. We had pretty high numbers and then it dropped off. And as you well know, the number of cases dropped off here in Summit County. And I think that's attributable to the efforts of the local health officials for doing the right thing. And, mm-hmm. and the results prove that. You can kind of think of this study as the canary in the coal mine. It's an indicator of, hey, something isn't quite right. And if you see a huge spike in the genetic copies in the wastewater, something's going on, and it's not good. So you can get a couple days jump on what's likely to happen, and I think that's where the benefits from this monitoring comes about.
Mike, is this a technique that's used to track or detect or be an early warning sign for other diseases?
Hmm. We have not been involved in that. A couple comments. One, a number of wastewater entities work with the drug enforcement agencies, and they monitor the levels of illicit drugs. And that's very similar to this COVID study, and that is, the more, say, cocaine you find in the system, it's pretty logical that the more that's being used in your community.
Right.
Now, when it comes to other bacteria or viral pathogens, we have not been involved in that. We just know it's all there, and we just assume it's there all the time. Hmm. I'm assuming, however, that if you were to have a huge measles outbreak or something along those lines, then a study would be put in place similar to the COVID study. And again, it would be an indicator of, hey, what's taking place. But that's certainly possible. And it fits right along the same lines as this pilot study.
Hey, I got a question from a listener. They wanted to know, what was the typical turnaround time from the point of taking a sample and getting a result back?
Yeah, initially, a lot of the laboratories were just cranking up their ability to do the PCR test specifically for the RNA virus. So it was, you know, I'm going to say 5, 6, 7, 8 days. But towards the end of the study, there was multiple labs involved in this. They really sped things up. So now we're down just to a couple days. And I suspect this next study, the turnaround is going to be like 2 days or something like that.
Right. Okay. Yeah, that's obviously a critical element in.
Sure. Yeah, they're getting better and better, and the mechanization of multiple studies is falling into place here, I would be surprised if they get to the point where it's, you know, less than 24 hours.
Right. And I'll go one step further. Maybe you can do it in-house.
You know, there are laboratory machines that you can do it in-house. As a matter of fact, the White House has one. It's kind of a package deal, and you put a sample in and it spits out a result. Those are obviously high price, but that can be done.
How about virus showing up in, say, certain parts of the plant? Do you think this, on the solids handling side, the sludge that is ultimately formed, that you need to be mindful of the virus being or genetic material of the virus being present in solids?
Yeah, we assume that the wastewater, as it passes through the plant, is contagious until the very end, at what point in time we take the clean water and we disinfect it. So we take precautions to protect our employees. And when it comes to the solids, two things. One, there's genetic material in the solids, but we don't find live viruses because at that point, they've been processed and they're outside the body and the conditions don't exist for them to live. So we have, you might say, dead viruses, but right. That's about the extent of it.
Okay. So just to wrap this conversation up, there's another study, a more robust, fuller study that's going to continue on with respect to this assessment?
Yeah, so the Division of Water Quality has been very pleased with the results from the pilot study. And those, we call the pilot study the sampling of those 10 wastewater plants. Now that those results have been in, this state is going to expand the number of treatment plants that will be sampled for the SARS virus, and we call that the kind of the main study, and that'll be weekly samples through the end of the year.
All right. And actually, I'm assuming that maybe there are studies like this are going on in other parts of the country too.
Not only parts of the country, but around the world. And again, it's all because, hey, can we get a heads up on a sudden increase in a local community? And, you know, it's also information for, say, some small towns that have very low levels, that it's an indicator to the public officials that, hey, we have multiple bits of evidence that our number of people that have it is low, and we can open up earlier. We might go to a green instead of a yellow phase. So it works on both sides.
All right. Now, back a few months ago, you came on to talk about another subject that was really giving you a lot of heartache, and that was these quote-unquote, quote-unquote, disposable wipes.
Also kind of associated, right, with the onset of this pandemic,
yes. The
increased use of these wipes.
So, can you give us an update on what's going on there?
So again, just to remind everyone what we're talking about, when you walk into Costco and you see these big boxes of flushable wipes.
Flushable.
Well, those wipes are made from a non-woven material that does not break down when they're flushed. So when they say they're flushable, yes, you can flush them, but they don't break down once they leave your commode, and they stop up our pumps. They stop up all our screens that we use, and they're a nightmare for the wastewater industry. When toilet paper started to become scarce, we saw more and more wipes being used, and that's just a huge headache for us. And it can be a headache for the homeowner too, because if your sewer line that leaves your home gets stopped up, let's say there's maybe a tree out in your front yard and the tree roots are starting to get in your pipe a little bit, and normal toilet paper would get past that root, but a wipe will get stuck on that and they'll build up, and before you know it, you got sewage backing up into your house. So it starts there, and we had the same issue throughout the wastewater treatment plant, and we pick up hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of these things every single day out of the treatment plant.
And that has to be done manually, right? That's people in there pulling these out.
Good point.
Oof.
We have, it depends where it is. If they're on automated screens, we take those out mechanically. But the nightmare is the pumps. These things wrap around the impellers and the pumps. And when that happens, we have to send people in there, pull the pumps out, which are obviously coated in raw sewage, disassemble the pump, pull all the wipes out, put it all back together. And some of these pumps are, you know, very large, and it can take a day to take one of these things apart with multiple people working on it. So, you know, it's something that can be avoided. We ask the listeners, hey, if you use any kind of wipe whatsoever, I don't care if they call them flushable or non-flushable or baby wipes or body wipes, simply put them in the trash and save yourself and save us a big headache.
Right, and if it's any indication of what I see on the ground, too, I'm sure you're seeing an increase in masks and gloves. And like you say, it's not the three Ps that you talk about, right?
Right, it's, poop, pee, and paper, and that's, you know, toilet paper, and that's it. Otherwise, sewage can back up in your home. It can back up in the middle of, you know, Main Street, or any of the subdivisions. These wipes can get stuck on any portion of the system, and it's a real nightmare, and it's a, you know, serious health problem for the public and our employees.
So have you seen any change in this? Have you seen fewer of these coming through as things have maybe calmed down a little bit?
No, I can't say we have.
Well, darn.
Yeah.
We'll keep trying to get the word out there.
Well, right.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. Well, last thing wanted to touch on, again, when we spoke with you in maybe end of March or so, you actually had a couple of staff who were suffering from the disease. You had different staff schedules and rotations. Everything was different. How is staff doing mm-hmm. these days?
Okay, our staff's doing great. We had a little scare this week. One of our employees' spouse was in contact with multiple people that were positive. Those tests had been conducted and they all came back negative. So that was a situation that we were really concerned with. But to answer your question, we have not had any additional positive tests with our employees here at the district. We continue to meet remotely. We limit how much time we spend with each other. I had a staff meeting this morning, and we still use, Zoom. And so far, so good. We are paying attention to the increase in cases here in Utah the last, 10 days or so. So we're asking everyone to be extra careful. And we ask the public to protect themselves and to protect others.
Right, right. Okay. Well, we got to wrap up. Going back to that study, is that study available online anywhere if people want to learn more about it?
Yes, it is. I can see the best way to tell you. You can. I'm going to put it on our website, and you can go to the results of the, they call it the SARS-CoV-2 sewage monitoring in Utah, and I'll put it on our website. And our website is simply sbwrd.org. And I'll have a link on there that you can go to.
Perfect. Mike Lures, General Manager of the Snyderville Basin Water Reclamation District. Thanks, as always, for taking the time to chat with us. And we'll loop back with you, of course, in a few more months.
Thank you very much for having me.
Get another update.